Hello and welcome to the podcast for Chapter 15, Secession and Civil War. As Lincoln pointed out, the Civil War was a test of whether the American people, or any people for that matter of fact, could govern themselves. The storm gathers. Secession did not necessarily mean war. There was one last attempt to reconcile the North and the South, and there was much doubt about how firmly the federal government should respond to secession. The Deep South secedes. South Carolina seceded on December 20, 1860, and by February 1861, six more states, all in the Deep South, had joined South Carolina in forming the Confederate States of America. Significantly, the new Confederate government was headed by men who were moderates and who had not led the secession movement. Significantly also is the fact that the Confederate Constitution resembles the U.S. Constitution. The South did not secede in order to create a slaveholder's utopia. The South dreamed of restoring the Union as it had been before the rise of the Republican Party, and even though the Confederate Constitution protected slavery, it was hoped that some or all of the northern states would join the Confederacy. The failure to compromise. There was a last-minute effort to save the Union, and Congress support grew for a plan put forward by Senator John Crittenden, the essence of which was to settle the problem of slavery in the territories by extending the Missouri Compromise line to the Pacific. Lincoln rejected this plan because he did not think it would end secession and because he viewed it as a repudiation of the principles on which he had been elected. And war came. President Buchanan had made no attempt to coerce the South back into the Union, and many Northerners wanted to let the South go in peace. Most Northerners, however, wanted forceful action to preserve the Union. When Lincoln took office, he discovered that he must either quickly resupply the federal garrison in Fort Sumter, South Carolina, or surrender it. He opted for resupply and informed the governor of South Carolina of that decision. Before the supplies could arrive, South Carolina forces opened fire on Fort Sumter on April 12th and captured it. Lincoln called out the northern state militia to suppress the insurrections in the South. Lincoln's actions united the South. Virginia now seceded, followed by the rest of the Upper South. Only four slave states remained in the Union: Delaware, Maryland, Kentucky, and Missouri. In the North, the general public responded eagerly to what they expected would be a short war. Although it had been the issue of slavery that led to secession, people at the time defined the war in the terms of whether or not the Union was indissoluble. Adjusting to total war. Because the North could restore the Union only by destroying the Southern will to resist, the Civil War became a total war. Prospects, plans, and expectations. Both sides had advantages that gave them hope of victory. The South adopted a defensive strategy, thereby requiring the North to fight in unfamiliar and hostile terrain. Lincoln took advantage of the North's greater resources in men and materials so that a two-front strategy could be adopted. He sent troops to capture Richmond, Virginia, the capital of the Confederacy, and he sent troops to seize control of the Mississippi River. In addition, he ordered the Navy to blockade Southern ports. Mobilizing the home front. Both the North and the South put volunteers into the field in the first year of the war, but both sides finally had to resort to conscription in the summer of 1862. The North had an easier time of financing the war through taxes, bonds, and paper money and private industry kept the Union armies generally well supplied. The Confederate government, lacking an industrial base, succeeded in setting up government arsenals that kept the Confederate army supplied, but the Confederates found it very difficult to finance the war effort, and the South suffered runaway inflation. A more serious problem was the Confederacy could not create an adequate transportation system to carry food to its cities and armies. Political leadership, Northern successes and Southern failures. Lincoln was far more effective chief executive than Jefferson Davis. Lincoln greatly expanded his wartime powers by declaring martial law and rounding up about 10,000 subversives who were imprisoned without trial. At the same time, Northern newspapers and politicians were free to attack Lincoln, which ensured that the Republican Party rallied around him. Jefferson Davis, on the other hand, concerned himself mainly with his military duties and showed little interest in civilian morale and economic problems. Because there was no political organization loyal to him, Davis had little influence with state governments, which sometimes impeded the war effort. Early campaigns and battles. In the first year of the war, the North achieved total naval supremacy and cleared Confederate troops from West Virginia, Kentucky, and much of Tennessee. New Orleans was now taken, but the drive to take control of the Mississippi stalled at the Battle of Shiloh in the east. The Union tried several times to take Richmond, but all efforts failed when Robert E. Lee invaded Maryland. He was defeated at Antietam. The diplomatic struggle. The South failed to gain recognition of its independence from any foreign nation. England did extend belligerent rights to the Confederacy, but wanted proof that the South could win independence on the battlefield before risking a war with the United States. France would recognize the Confederacy only if England did. King Cotton turned out to play virtually no role in determining the foreign policy of the European powers. Fight to the finish. After 1863, the war went steadily against the South, but Southern resistance continued and the North had to adopt more radical measures in order to win, including emancipation of the slaves. The coming of emancipation. In the first year of the war, the North fought to save the Union and oppose making the struggle one for the freedom of blacks. But as the dream of quick victory faded, pressure built to do something to hurt the South. When the Union army prevailed at the Battle of Antietam, Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation on September 22, 1862, giving the South 100 days to surrender if it wished to preserve slavery. On January 1, 1863, the proclamation went into effect, and in these areas still in the rebellion. The proclamation encouraged African Americans to flee in even larger numbers to the Union lines, thereby robbing thousands of laborers from the Confederate war effort. African Americans in the war. Almost 200,000 African Americans served in the Union Army, and many others were used as laborers in the Northern war effort. Their contributions encouraged Lincoln to push further and further for their rights. He organized government in conquered Southern states that abolished slavery and persuaded Maryland and Missouri to do likewise. Finally, Lincoln and the Republicans passed the 13th Amendment through Congress on January 31, 1865. The tide turns. By 1863, both sides were war-weary. The Southern economy was in a shambles, and desertions had become a major problem. In the North, the Democrats increasingly attacked Lincoln's handling of the war and his emancipation of the slaves. When the federal government had to resort to outright conscription, riots broke out in New York City. It was necessary to use army troops to restore order. On the battlefield, the Union advance had stopped. Ulysses S. Grant seemed bogged down before Vicksburg, and another advance on Richmond ended with a complete defeat at Chancellorsville. During the summer, the tide of battle turned. Lee invaded the North and lost the crucial Battle of Gettysburg at exactly the same time the Union Army took Vicksburg and, with it, control of the Mississippi. Last stages of the conflict. Following his victory at Vicksburg, Grant became General-in-Chief of the Union Army and invaded the South on all fronts. While William Sherman led the Western armies through Georgia, Grant forced Lee slowly back towards Richmond. Unable to defeat or outmaneuver Lee, Grant settled into a long siege at Richmond and Petersburg. For a while, Lincoln feared that the apparent stalemate before Richmond would result in his defeat in the election of 1864, but Sherman's capture of Atlanta revived Northern morale, and Lincoln beat Democratic candidate General George McClellan by an overwhelming majority. In the winter of 1864 and the early spring of 1865, Union forces were victorious everywhere. Lee surrendered his army on April 9th. 5 days later, John Wilkes Booth assassinated Lincoln, but the Union had been saved. Effects of the war. The war profoundly changed the United States. The death of 618,000 men left many women bereaved of husbands and either encouraged or forced them to seek roles other than those of wife and mother. 4 million African Americans were free, but not yet equal. Industrial workers suffered from the wartime inflation, but hoped that the Republican Party would take up their cause. The war gave the federal government predominance over the states, even though the states continued to have primary responsibility for most functions of government. In the realm of economic policy, the Republican Party had enacted measures to encourage businesses, and the federal government would continue to play an activist role in the economy. Most of all, the war organized the American people. An individualistic society of small producers had begun the transformation towards the modern bureaucratic state, a development celebrated by intellectuals like Ralph Waldo Emerson, who had once espoused the autonomy of the individual. The most pervasive change in the Northern society engendered by the war was an organizational revolution out of which many of the huge corporations that colored the post-war period were born. Philanthropy was also affected by this revolution, the most notable example being the certain of the sanitary commissions early in the war. In general, the war encouraged a shift away from traditional individualism towards social discipline and collective action. In many ways, the Union's ability to organize, mobilize, and modernize won the war. Well, that is the podcast for Chapter 15. As always, until next time, we'll cast you later. Thank you very much.